Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. In the 1970s, fashion designer Halston reinvented elegance in American fashion. With stylish simplicity, his attention to detail, and his media savvy, Halston quickly rose from a milliner at Bergdorf Goodman's to run an internationally renowned fashion house that dominated 70s couture and called New York City home. But when the creativity of Halston butted up against the corporate culture of the company that bought the label, Halston lost control of pretty much everything, even the rights to his own name. A new documentary combs through archival footage to tell the story of Halston's rise and fall. It's called Halston, and it's playing in select theaters now here in New York City at the Quad on 13th Street this week. Joining us to discuss this unique story is Roland Balster and director Frederick Chang. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So when did you first... Let me start first with Halston himself. You know, we know this tall, elegant, sophisticated, with this sort of gorgeous entourage around him. But as I learned through the documentary, that was largely creative, that created by him, about him. So, Roland, tell us a little bit about Halston, his real name, where he was from.
The basic details. His real name is, his full name is Roy Halston Froehlich. He was born in Des Moines, Iowa at the height of the Depression in 1932. To a family of working class. It was a working class family. And, you know, typical Depression upbringing. Money was very tight, and that really informed his character and his work value and his rigorous approach to life.
He was also gay, I might add, because that, I think, informs also a lot of how he constructed his persona. And you talk about this image, this, you know... almost like a persona that he took on with the glasses and the entourage. And I think that was very informed by growing up gay in the Midwest, you know, in the Depression era. You had to sort of create this shield around you. And you see that in the film, you know, evolve even through the 60s when there was still a lot of homophobia in New York City. And he was working at Bergdorf doing hats, and he was... We have his assistant telling us how he was rejected from a society dinner because he was gay. And so he decided to sort of, he was going to be the one who decides who is appropriate or not, you know, not society people telling him that he doesn't fit.
He went as far as even to change the pronunciation of his name.
Yes, his mother would correct people. Halston was the traditional name, but he changed it to Halston, and that's what they go by now.
So you are acquainted with the family, right, Roland?
I am.
Tell us about your association with the Halston.
The Halston family. I'm friends. My initial friendship with the family started with his nephew, George. George Froehlich is the son of Robert Froehlich, who appears in the film, who was a diplomat. And George, I was friends with maybe a year or two before I realized the family connection. He never talked about it. And the only reason I found out about it was because I saw his license once. And it said George Halston Froehlich. And I said, oh, Halston liked the design. He said, yeah, that's my uncle. So it was this whole world.
Wow.
And he, to his credit, I mean, not to go too much about George, but he never was part of that world. Halston offered him to work for him, but George wasn't interested. He was more interested in motorcycles and things like that, and not in that world. So through George, I met Leslie, his sister, and Leslie, as the film shows, was very close with Halston. And that's how that started about 30-something years ago.
Yeah, Leslie wrote a book that sort of started this whole project, because then she wanted to do something on film. And, you know, she has a very interesting point of view, because she was with Halston in 83, 84, you know, when you mentioned in the beginning of the program that he lost everything. That was in 83, 84, when he started butting heads with the corporation. And she was not only living with him in his townhouse, you know, as a guest in the guest bedroom, but also working with him at the Olympic Tower in his office. So she saw everything firsthand, and she decided to write a book, and then she decided to do something in film. And I have to say, she's remarkably brave, because she gave us a lot of access, and yet she didn't see the film until like the week before it premiered at Sundance. So she was very off, hands, like in terms of creative control.
Well, let's play. I want to play a little bit like the first minute of the trailer, so people can hear Halston's voice, can also get a sense of placing him in a time and place and his importance. So let's do a little bit of the trailer from the documentary Halston.
I'm Halston.
My name is Halston.
The most successful single individual in the history of American fashion. Ladies and gentlemen, Halston.
His clothes danced with you.
You were free inside your clothes.
The simplicity was really needed, and it was all American from an all-American boy.
He came from nowhere.
Were you the person who put the pill box on Jackie Kennedy?
Yes, I was.
And he really saw the future.
His front row was the most glamorous in New York.
He was the first to really bring in movie stars.
Brilliant marketing.
You're a devotee of Studio 54. It's good for everybody on every level of society.
Halston was at the top of his game. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
A lot of those barriers just fell down.
Is it tougher to get on top or to stay on top?
Cliffhanger. My guests are director Frederick Chang and producer Roland Ballster. We're talking about the film Halston. In that clip, it's really interesting. You get a sense of Frederick. You've done a lot of documentaries about fashion and the world of fashion. Can you explain for our audience what was so significant about him at that time? Why he was just such a big deal?
I think he really seized on the moment, and he came to epitomize really the 70s. And I think what he understood was that, you know, in the 60s, American fashion was very much following Paris and replicating what the French designers were doing. And what they were doing was very structured. And he decided to liberate women's bodies and sort of create a fashion that was draping on the body as opposed to being contrived in a structure. And, you know, that's Liza Minnelli in the trailer saying, like, his clothes danced with you. And I think they really did. And you see them in movement. And so there was something minimal and completely new and completely American about what he was doing. And, you know, that's just the fashion side of it. Then he was also using models of color on the runway. He was using plus size models. So he had like a totally new approach that was not what Paris was doing. And I think that really just put him on the map and put American fashion on the map.
Roland, there's so much great archival footage in this documentary, and we're sort of led to believe, and I'm not sure if I understood, that a lot of this may have been destroyed, that there was a lot of documentation that disappeared. Where did you find all of this footage?
A lot of footage was destroyed, but to be clear, and there's a line in the film that explains this, there were the company set of videotapes, and there were Halston's set of videotapes, and the company destroyed their set of tapes. Halston had his copy.
I see.
So that's why we were able to go back to a lot of those tapes. So we used those tapes, which were provided by Leslie, as the basis, and they were magnificent, but they weren't enough. We still had to do a lot more digging and research, and we expanded out to all sorts of different places and never took no for an answer.
As a director, who did you know you wanted to have in this film? Who did you know you needed to interview to get the whole story?
Well, I mean, I think Liza Minnelli is definitely, mm-hmm. you know, the number one answer, because she was so close to him, and she was the last interview we did basically before we wrapped the filming. And, you know, she had a very, very intimate relationship with Halston, and she was very protective of his legacy, just like Leslie. So it was very hard to get to her, but I think through... You know, we worked really hard on just like showing that we were not about sensationalizing the story, and that we were interested in really giving her a voice. And so eventually she felt comfortable. I mean, another part of the story that on the other end of the spectrum that I knew I wanted to get was the businessman, especially mm-hmm. Carl Epstein, who was the managing director for the corporation when Halston got kicked out of his own company. And I wanted to understand how that year unfolded and what exactly, because there were two narratives. The corporation was saying that he was out of control, and the Halston side, Leslie, you know, mainly was saying that, you know, the corporation was being unreasonable and kicking him out when he had worked for 30 years in building this company. So it was interesting to get to the bottom, like what happened in 84 at that company. And, you know, I wish I could say I found the answer, but I think there's still two very convincing narratives about the artist versus the corporation.
We learn, you know, Halston expands into fragrance, and he's continually expanding. He's clearly a really ambitious business person as well as a creative person. Roland, as you were developing the film and as you watched the film, from a business point of view, where did he err? What mistakes did he make?
I think the initial, well, the error goes, the roots go back to this deal he signed with Norton Simon. In 1973, he signed a deal with Norton Simon where he became the first designer to join a conglomerate. Now, back then, it's not like today where you have the LVMHs of the world, which are basically in the business of fashion, and they have several different labels. At the time, it was the vogue of the 60s and the 70s of these conglomerates where they were varied businesses, so one didn't have anything to do with the other. You know, you had Halston, but then you also had Avis Rent-A-Car with the same owners. So obviously, Halston could never get the volume, the sales of an Avis Rent-A-Car. But the CEO of Norton Simon was very interested in Halston as sort of a platform to increase his social position. So Halston did not have a very clear understanding of where his position was in the pecking order. He thought he had elevated, more important to the corporation than he actually was. And that was because of the way he was treated. You know, that's a natural. If you're treated well, you're going to assume certain things. So it was, I think the fundamental error was not understanding where you were in the pecking order and what are the steps you can do to protect yourself. Now, he also sold his name. That is true. That's sort of like the simplification of what went wrong with Halston, is that when you sell your name to a corporation or whomever, they can do whatever they want with it, which in his case, after first 10 years were great. The last 10 year after that, that's when the problems really started.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to add that the first 10 years were amazing. I mean, we have to remember that also. You know, of course, he made an error in selling his name, and maybe it came back to haunt him 10 years later. But we have to understand that in 73, he was just a small designer, just like there were many in America. And by 83, 84, he's the number one American designer, no contest. And he is at the head of a corporation that, you know, has so many firsts. He was the first to go to China. He was an international celebrity, and his designs had reached the top. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting, and that's what I wanted to show in the film, is that he's not completely a victim. I think he might not have had the best lawyers to sign that deal in 73, but he sure did take advantage of all the possibilities of that, you know, association.
One of the things I found so interesting about the film, this one part, and it's not a big part of the film about Halston, is his confusion, and maybe it wasn't confusion, maybe you've seen the footage, over why a deal with JCPenney and Halston would be a problem.
Well, he was the first. That's why it was a problem. I mean, obviously, you know, from like 2019, we see it every month at Target or Uniqlo or an H&M has a
high
collaboration.
Low. Yeah. A high-low collaboration.
That was his vision. He saw it. It was very obvious to him. It wasn't obvious to, you know, the fancy accounts, but it was to him.
I think they saw it as a threat, you know, because Bergdorf Goodman had a business with Halston, and they were threatened by what he was thinking outside of the box. And, you know, it's all about power, and that's kind of what's fascinating about these stories. Like, the business and the creative is all, it's always this power play, and too often the creative people get, you know, the short end of the stick because they care a little too much, and that's their vulnerability. And you know, I see that in my own career, and I see that in Halston's career, like, really play on a big scale.
My guests are Frederick Chang and Roland Ballister. We're talking about their new documentary, Halston. It's currently playing at the Quad. You talk a little bit about in the film, you touch on his drug use. You know, it was the height of Studio 54. Was he a casual drug user? Was it actually, did it become a problem for him?
Oh, it was for sure a problem. And a lot of people acknowledge it. And it was important to go and talk to, you know, his not only his family, but also the models and all the people who actually love him, and to get the real story of, like, how the dysfunction, you know, that started to happen when he lost control of his company, and he was addicted to some substances, alcohol, cocaine, and then he became very volatile. And we have you know, a lot of testimonies for the first time, like, showing how his behavior deteriorated. But I think it was important to put it in context of him being under siege, and also him sort of, you know, being a perfectionist, really, and wanting the best out of his product always. And so he would drive other people mad, you know, but unfortunately, that's a lot of creative geniuses are like that.
Well, he pushed himself hard, too.
When you explore the relationship between Halston and this larger company, S-Mark, that bought him. And as you mentioned, they sell all kinds of things that you don't think about go with fashion. Was it a win-win? How did they both see it as a win-win in the beginning?
They didn't see it as a win-win. What happened was Halston had been bought by Norton Simon in 1973. And then in 1983, Norton Simon was bought in a leveraged buyout by S-Mark. And S-Mark was not interested in Halston.
They bought
Norton Simon for the other assets. Mm-hmm. Halston was just there for the ride, in their opinion. So they didn't see it as a win-win at all. If anything, they saw it as a massive headache that took up far too much of their time. And Halston clearly didn't like it because now his protector and friend, Dave Mahoney, was gone.
And enter Carl Epstein.
Exactly, who's not interested in hanging out with Liza Minnelli, even though in the beginning...
He seems a little bit interested in the beginning.
They do have a little bit of a song and dance and like a honeymoon period. And then very soon, again, it's like egos or power or something, but he got miffed at something that Halston did. And you know, they started butting heads. And then from then on, it was just full-on war. And Carl Epstein actually, he in the film, I won't spoil it, but he's like very interested in the military. And he really approached his relationship with Halston as kind of like a war, a battle.
I was going to ask, was it personal? I mean, if the business is business, and you can kind of understand that. But for Carl Epstein, there's this moment in the film where it seems to take a personal swing.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's personal. When you destroy a man's entire archive, you know, he had these fire sales, and I wish I had been there because they were selling Halston's dresses for $25 a piece. And, you know, he had spent 30 years amassing this work, and this businessman comes in and deems it invaluable and just a burden and just, you know, liquidates the whole asset.
And those aren't just dresses. Those are samples. Those are the originals. So it's even more valuable.
They could have been in the Met costume.
Exactly.
Gala.
That's what I asked him. And then the blank on his face when I asked him, like, why didn't you give them to a museum? It's just, I still can't understand. You
know. Halston's final days, his final years, how does he spend them?
He spends them in San Francisco with his family. He left New York behind and everybody in it. He didn't want to be seen. He was a very private man. And, you know, with AIDS, it's a very hard thing mm-hmm. physically. So he didn't want people to see him. And the only people who saw him were family.
Yeah, because he was fighting for his company until very late. You know, like after he lost control, he was trying to get his name back for many years. And then he got diagnosed with HIV, unfortunately. And he decided to that it was not going to happen. And because at the time in 88, you know, being HIV positive was a death sentence. Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine from 2019 when so much has been achieved. But he knew he was going to die, so he wanted to reconnect with his family. And that's the last part of his life.
But one thing to follow up on that, he had plans for the future. He was planning on building a gorgeous house in Santa Rosa, Japanese style.
It would have been beautiful.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's for sure. The name of the film is Halston. Frederick Chang and Roland Balster, thank you so much for joining us on All of It. You can see the film at the Quad. Have the screenings been great?
The screenings have been great.
Have people come who knew Halston?
Yes, absolutely. This woman came up and she was like, I met Halston.
And people who don't know Halston have seen it too, which is good.
This is All of It on WNYC. I will meet you at the top of the hour after the news.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.